Here's Higdon. It sits up nicely for Michael Higdon. And what a start for Motherwell. But here's Malt, and he goes for it for Sam. Magnificent Malt. Stephen Robinson celebrates. Motherwell, 2-1. And could that be the goal that puts him into the Betfred Cup final?
He's got Irwin. The supporting links from Ainsworth on the angle. Lionel Ainsworth fires home.
It's Lasley deep into stoppage time. Up goes Sutton. No foul given. Kerr. And Reid is there to knock it in. The goal is given. Hesitation for Craig Reid, who scores his first ever goal in senior football. And what a moment for Motherwell.
Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. The 2019-20 season is over. We'll talk about the circumstances behind that. We'll look ahead to next season. We'll discuss departures and incomings at Firth Park. And we'll see what else takes a fancy over the next three quarters of an hour or so. I'm joined today by Pepe and Scott Kennedy. Guys, thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks for having us, Andy. Looking forward to it.
How are we doing, guys? All right?
Yeah, it's certainly been a while. And Scott, I'll start with yourself. The season is over prematurely, albeit. Motherwell finished third, a fantastic achievement for Stephen Robinson and his players. Maybe somewhat subdued circumstances given the fact that the season wasn't played out on the park, but there's no getting away from the gravity of that achievement, is there?
No, I think everybody would have wanted to finish the season on the park, and finish the season obviously would have been the first thing that we would have been looking for. But you know, when you look back, we've been up there pretty much since the season started. We've not really dropped out of that top 3-4 position, so it's not as if, you know, you might be a wee bit aggrieved if you're sitting fourth or something, and then suddenly the week before lockdown you jump into third. You know, you say you might not deserve that position, but I genuinely think that over the season we've shown that we have been the third best team and we deserve to be there. So I would have hoped that that's how it would have finished if the season had ended, but I don't think we've achieved anything which is unfair.
Certainly not, Pepe. And you look at the outset of the season, the objectives that are communicated are to stay in the league and then try and push for the top six. To finish third in a league where you've got Aberdeen, who, despite the fact that under Derek McInnes they've somewhat wavered, but they've always been up there. You thought you were going to have a strong Hibs side who ended up finishing seventh on average points. What we thought would be a strong Hearts side, who had a very disappointing season. But what I'm getting at here is teams with resources and a budget well above what we have. It's a magnificent achievement by Stephen Robinson, and he is going to receive so many plaudits for this. It's a scenario which has a double edge, I suppose. The manager rightfully nominated for Manager of the Year. The players, the coaching staff and Stephen Robinson all receiving great praise for their achievements this season. But then you get back to that usual scenario of then beginning to worry what happens to those players that have performed so well and what happens to the manager who has led us to our highest finish in quite some time and continues to make the most of his very limited resources and budget.
I think the manager has repeatedly stressed about how our budget differs from Aberdeen, Hearts, Hibs, and we're at the probably bottom 2-3 in relation to budget. So when you look at what we've achieved, the best of the remaining teams, it really is phenomenal. I thought we were many years away for that. So as an achievement, it's great. It's going to be great again that we can get European football back, whether that be that we don't get to go to the game or watching it on a TV somewhere. That is yet to be decided, but taking that out of the equation, it's still phenomenal. If you say to me at the start of the season you'll be here talking about European football, I would never have believed it. So I'm delighted, and it doesn't bother me one bit that they've not finished the season. It means that we get Europe out of it. It's brilliant. I'm absolutely delighted. And just going on to say what you were saying about worrying about players moving on who have been successful, the likes of Declan Gallagher, David Turnbull, Alan Campbell, etc. I think that the current climate in relation to coronavirus, COVID, whatever you want to refer to it as, is going to have an influence on the transfer market, because I don't think that, that teams are going to be so financially stable that they're going to be able to come in and buy the players. And I think like Motherwell have kind of been honourable, done well with all the players, and I think it's maybe going to work in our favour that we'll keep the nucleus of this squad together that wee bit longer.
Scott, what were the circumstances of the league being ended prematurely? We've obviously seen the likes of the German Bundesliga. The English Premier League begins again next week. La Liga begins tonight. So in other countries have found a way to conclude their seasons. Don't get me wrong, there's the likes of France who did bring the season to an end. Belgium did the same. I believe they did the same in Holland as well. I'm kind of struggling to keep up with all the kind of ongoing scenario in world football just now. But for me, the authorities in Scotland gave it the best possible chance to finish the season. It was looked very unfeasible and unlikely that they were going to be able to do so. They gave it a bit of time. They allowed the member clubs to have a vote and then went with the vote. Of course, in any kind of democratic situation, there is going to be people that are disappointed and people that feel a wee bit hard done to. It's exceptional circumstances with the likes of Hearts, Partick Thistle even more so in the Championship, Stranraer in League One. So there's teams that are feeling very, very aggrieved by this situation. But it can't be overlooked, the fact that the majority of the season had been played. And this is something that's been achieved in merit. There's all the talk of things being tainted and such like. For me, that's a complete and utter nonsense. The season was played to that point. The best teams will be at the top of the table. The teams that have performed the poorest will be at the bottom. And that is how a season plays out. That's why we don't play a season over a couple of weeks. These are unprecedented times and we're constantly reminded of that. So we've got every right to celebrate it. I really couldn't get my head around some of the disparaging comments about Motherwell celebrating a third place finish. You've got to go back to Stuart McCall's time in the 2013-2014 season, where the team recorded a second place finish. So you're now 6 years on. This is a highest league finish. We've had years out with the top six. It's Stephen Robinson's first time he's been able to guide the team into the top six. So what have we not got to celebrate?
You know, I mean, let's be honest here. Football, and one thing that surprises me that folks still don't get it, is that football is tribal. You know, and if we were in Hart's position or Partick Thistle's position, then you can absolutely guarantee that our fans and our board would be talking about, you know, let's pursue through the courts, let's do this, let's do that, it's unfair.
I absolutely get that, but that wasn't really my point, though. In terms of, I was more focused on ourselves and celebrating the fact that we've finished where we have. That's been done in merit. Don't get me wrong, we can all kind of see where the supporters of Hearts and Partick Thistle and Stranraer are coming from, in the terms they feel possibly quite rightfully aggrieved at how this has played out. But it's tribal as football is. In that sense, it's not our problem, is it?
No, but that's the key thing. You know, we are there, as you said, because we've played the majority of the season. And importantly for me as well, we've been there for the majority of the season. It's not something that's happened over the last couple of weeks. And even if it had been something that had happened over the last couple of weeks, when the last game was played, that's where we were. That's what the positions were. If that Aberdeen game had went ahead, then, you know, we might have cemented that position. They might have won the game. Who knows? That's all us buts and maybes. But when the decision was taken by the clubs, that's where we were sitting. For a club of our size, with our fan base and number of season ticket holders, etc., and the budget that we have, we can talk about budget to death, but you know that is an outstanding achievement for us. And if other teams or other fans or whatever want to deride us for celebrating that, then you you know, let them go on with it, because that obviously means that they've not got anything to celebrate themselves. But it's a fantastic achievement for us to finish there.
And we move on to look at the 2020-2021 season. The players gradually returning to training this week. So all systems go, Pepe, in terms of preparation for the forthcoming season. It looks like it will start on schedule in the first week of August. We've been so long without football. I've not been... Wow, going back to the St Mirren game. First part, the 2-1 defeat after we went out the Scottish Cup the week before. So it's been a long time since I've seen Motherwell in action. It's even longer since I've seen us win. That was way back at Pittodrie in January. So we're starved of football. There's no getting away from that. The circumstances of the return of the Scottish Premiership will be drastically different from what we're used to. We've already been informed that the games will be behind closed doors to begin with. The way that Scotland is moving out of lockdown, it's a very gradual process. I know myself, I had a ticket for a gig at the end of September. That's already been cancelled. The Barrowlands, I really struggle to see football being played in front of fans perhaps this year. I think we're looking at Christmas time, possibly earliest, to have fans back in football grounds. It's going to be drastically different, but I think it's a demonstration, though, that the world continues to turn and football is going to be back. Maybe not as we know it initially, but it's somewhat of a relief, because we were beginning to feel that as the day that normality in Scottish football ever returns, we were beginning to doubt it somewhat.
I mean, it is strange. The time has actually been pretty quick for me. I've been pretty busy, but not having that kind of usual link up to the Saturday, and even just now, when I think it would have been tomorrow that Euros would have started, and having football out of your life for such a long period of time, it's mad. People, I think, going back even to the previous point about when you were talking about us celebrating the finishing third. Again, I don't think there's an issue with that. People, certain people were saying, oh, there's people dying and stuff like that, which is tragic. But at the same time, for me, I'm not comparing the tragedies that's happened to football, but the biggest impact it's had in my life is not getting to the football. That's what I do with my wee boy. I love it every Saturday. If you've had a terrible week, you can go to Fir Park and either makes your week better, there's still that hope and belief, and I just can't wait to get it back in any form, whether that be sitting in the living room watching it. But at least you're going to have that kind of break away from normality, and I'm just really, really looking forward to it. It'll be interesting, though, as you say, Andy, that when you consider that the last time you've been to a game, we've all been to games, and you look at what the difference in what the team's going to be, it's going to be worse than the next season. I mean, it's mad when you look at what the starting 11s potentially are going to be, because it's what will that be, 6-7 months since we last played?
Yeah, it's as we're often reminded of the kind of change in times and the new normal and things like that. I think another thing that will be quite interesting is how the sort of pre-season plays out. Well, we have the group stages of the Betfred Cup. You've still got things like the semi-finals of the Scottish Cup still to be played. I listened to Ian Maxwell in an interview maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago talking about how he would much prefer the conclusion of the Scottish Cup to be played in front of supporters. I don't know if that's idealistic. I don't know why you wouldn't want to draw a line in the sand across the whole season rather than...
I think a lot of that's down to money, Andy, to be honest. I think that they'll probably be under pressure from the sponsors to conclude that tournament, so that they... That's my perception of it. Obviously, we're in the reason that down south in the English Premier League is going to start again is all to do with money. I can only see that's it. Now, I'm maybe saying that because if we were still in the Scottish Cup, a couple of years ago, we had a chance to get to the final, and I would be all for saying, no, I want to keep it going. Because we're not in it, my view is slightly different, and I would just think, well, why not just end it? So suppose, one, the money side of things, and two, your own personal interest probably comes into it.
I wouldn't really be an advocate for ending it. I don't think it'll be too difficult to play the remaining three games. It's more just the sense of, why would you wait until it's time for the fans to be able to get back in? Because that just means that you're going to have the overlap of the 1920 season during the 2021 season. I just prefer getting this season's matters done and dusted and then move on to deal with matters for 2021. I don't know in terms of the League Cup, Scott, would you maybe be tempted to forgo the League Cup this year? Just in terms of practicality issues as well.
I think probably overall that would be a good idea, because you've also got the issues of obviously the teams who have qualified for Europe, they don't come into that tournament until the later stages. So if, say for example, we don't know when the European Cup or the UEFA or Europa League, whatever, is going to begin. So do you then have a point where some, you know, Celtic, Rangers, Motherwell, Aberdeen, whoever, they don't have games to play, but the group stages of the League Cup have started, so some teams are getting games, their fitness is getting built up, etc. Logistically, that's something obviously which needs to be worked out. And you know, I think the League Cup, while you know, for like us, that's something that obviously we want to win. You want to win every tournament that you go into. Of the three, I would imagine that would probably be the easiest one to say, no, do you know what, we're going to just give it a miss this year. And we'll start, hopefully, as normal in July of 2021.
Yeah, that sounds like the much more practical way to do things. And Pepe, what's your take on closed-doors matches? Yes, the circumstances are that we can't have a large amount of supporters kind of squeezed into a football stadium. Our games generally played in front of 4,500 people in a stadium that holds nearly 14,000 people. Social distancing might be something that is able to be achieved somewhat easier at Fir Park than many other clubs in the Premiership, the likes of Rangers and Celtic. You would think it was almost a impossibility. Even the likes of Easter Road and Tynecastle, albeit that Hearts are now a Championship club, but you get my point. The closed doors games will be a completely different atmosphere. Well, there'll be no atmosphere. It could be a real challenge, particularly for the bigger clubs, I reckon, in terms of being able to use home advantage to their advantage.
Yep, I personally hope that we get Rangers and Celtic away early doors, because I think we could hold that to our advantage. I think that the crowd at both these grounds massively influenced the end result. And I think I'm influenced a wee bit with German football. If you'd said to me, if none of this, if I had never watched any games on the TV or behind closed doors, then I'd have been saying, oh, I don't care about it, as long as I get to see it. But let's be honest about it. I mean, it's dire. I don't know if it's just because it's German football. I think we'll get a better perception when there's a wee bit more familiarity there. But I don't know. As you say, it's like uncharted territory. How are you going to react? Sitting in your own living room, watching Motherwell playing at Fir Park with not a soul in the stand, hearing what every player's shouting. The ball sounds as if it's a rocket launcher when it gets banged with the centre half getting punted up the park. I just can't imagine what it's going to be like. If the German football's in to go by, the fans do make it. And I think that is the key thing. But on playing devil's advocate, I've just said there that I'm still dying for it to come back in any way, shape or form, so that you can have that Saturday, whether it be in the house. So if that's the only way that it's going to come back, if you give me the choice, I was the man who was making the decision saying it comes back in August behind closed doors, or it comes back in December with all the fans, then I would definitely pick August. I don't know about you guys.
I think for me personally, even just listening to you talking about the potential return, it does get the butterflies going and the kind of excitement there, because that that's certainly something that we've been missing for so many months now. I think, and I know that you weren't ignoring that, but the safety of people's paramount as well. The last thing that we want is to get back to some sense of normality and just being a bit reckless, causing a second spike, and suddenly we're back here recording a podcast talking about, as if we just hadn't been so stupid, then we could have had football this season, and we could potentially wipe out a full season of football by rushing things. So I think that there's going to be a great deal of caution exercised when it comes to this. We've got to even look back to 3 or 4 weeks ago when there was players down south refusing to go back to training. They weren't comfortable with the scenario. And then equate it to the fact that Scotland is a couple of weeks behind in dealing with this virus. So I think there'll be great caution exercised. And I think that we'll just have to be patient, basically. It'll maybe be a wee bit frustrating at times, watching games going ahead. There's people within our supporter base that have been to games and not missed a game for 5, 6, 7 seasons. It'll be very difficult for them not to be able to get along to the ground. Down south, and I know this isn't an English football podcast, but you, Scott, you've got an allegiance to Liverpool. How they're going to prevent a supporter base as large as Liverpool possess not descending on Anfield for the game that they need to win to wrap up the trophy. All these things have to be considered, and they're going to really need to be dealt with quite carefully. So there's so many arms to it.
I do think that there's one kind of point that I think football gets a different publicity to everything else. Now, we've all seen the kind of protests, and I'm not wanting to go in and talk about that, but I generally think that the media has got the poison pen for anything to do with football. So, for talking's sake, Liverpool do win the trophy, and there is going to be idiots that go out there and don't abide to the social distancing rules and stuff like that. But there's been so many other different things, and I just think it's so easy to criticise football fans. Where there's things happening every single day. I don't think that if Liverpool were talking about do win the league, that there will be mass gatherings. But there's been mass gatherings for anything. I've seen some on the TV last night where there was about 300 or 400 people at a block of flats in Glasgow. Do you know what I mean? So I think football's just going to be one of many things that there's going to be mass gatherings at.
And Scott, looking at the way the Motherwell are dealing with the 2020-2021 season, they have said that there will be access to all games at Fir Park that are played behind closed doors on a live stream. So I mentioned the fact that supporters have been to games and not missed a game for however many seasons. I think the main thing for the majority of us is that we get to follow the team in some sort of shape or form. The live streaming thing is a big boost. It would have been pretty horrendous to think that there would only be one or two games as per the Sky Sports deal broadcast, and then the rest of us were following games on Twitter, and I think Grant Russell himself would prefer that I didn't get into how the matches are covered on Twitter, because it just seems to stroke a fire every time it does happen. But yeah, it would have put big demands on the club to cover these games, and that's been alleviated. Sky Sports have allowed the clubs to broadcast these games, and we will be able to see whatever game we want to, as long as you've got a season ticket. Now, I don't know whether there'll be a pay-per-game option and things like that, because we've got to consider the fact that this is a very difficult time for so many. There's so many people have lost their jobs. There's so many people, myself included at this moment in time, that are very worried about my employment future and their employment future. They're not just worried about me. So, there's a lot of uncertainty, and there's a lot of challenges and obstacles that those within the football club never have ever foreseen themselves having to deal with.
No, I think, to be honest, all in all, I think the club's dealt with the situation very well. They've not rushed into any decisions. You know, they've taken time to consider their options. What can we do? What's the best way to look after the fans? You know, and I seen something on Twitter last night, and the club are getting plaudits from fans of all clubs because they're looking at it and saying, you know, they're offering the free stream, they're offering the ticket into the European or the Cup game, whichever we're first allowed into. Now, yesterday, obviously, they came back and they'd said they were offering the partial refund for anyone who needed it for last season's season ticket. And I think that's been important as to how the club have dealt with that, because obviously, as we've said, you know, fans are the lifeblood of the club. But I think what I've been most pleased about is that they haven't been forced into a knee-jerk reaction of, we're doing this. They've thought about it, they've considered it, and then, in my opinion, they've taken the right steps. And I'd seen Alan Burrows had said yesterday, he'd replied to someone and said that clubs were, you know, in there talking to Sky about some sort of, you know, paper game or whatever you want to call it, usage of that stream as well. So again, they are doing things the right way. For some people, these things, it might not happen quick enough, but I do think they have taken the right approach, and I think that they can only be commended for how they've treated the fans and kept us up to date and everything during the uncertainty.
Pepe, it's a tough time. In general, the club clearly need the revenue. They've had lost revenue for these remaining games. Yes, obviously, have had the boost of receiving the prize money for finishing in third place. I wouldn't imagine that they would have budgeted for finishing anywhere near as high as that. But that doesn't detract away from the fact that the club are badly needing the revenue. Season ticket sales have been extremely encouraging. The offer of a partial refund is available. And Jim McMahon, the chairman, has rightfully come out and released a very well-worded statement saying that he hopes that fans that can afford to do so will leave their money with the club. I would very much imagine the majority will do. There's been a few that have rightfully pointed out in social media, there's absolutely no shame for people that are in need of that money to come forward and claim money back for something that they haven't received. It's a very sensitive one, and one that the club have dealt with in the kind of community spirit and the fan own spirit that is becoming just synonymous with Motherwell Football Club.
I certainly have. When I read the statement yesterday, it was certainly was what I expected from Motherwell. It was obviously saying, look, if you can, it would help the club massively. If you didn't, take your refund, which certainly I won't. But I think they do need to understand that there's probably people out there that find it really difficult to pay for a season ticket for a start. And I don't think there'll be any shame in anybody getting their money back. But again, I was listening to some Old Firm fans, and the way that their clubs are treating them with regards to the streaming side of things is shocking. If there's, for example, if there's more than one householder that has got season tickets, then they're demanding that all of them pay their season tickets, what they've did for years, and it's not just one person that can watch the stream. So there's in-house fighting there, and as usual, our club come out with their heads held high. So it's again another great way that you can say, well, I'm just glad that I support Motherwell. As you say, it's a difficult situation, because if somebody is relying on that money, I would say that the statement certainly plays in the heartstrings, and it maybe put people off, because they maybe feel as if, well, I'm financially struggling, and I could really be doing with that money, but am I going to be vilified? Is it? Do you know what I mean? I can understand how people would feel like that. I'm just fortunate that I can afford to. I've been getting paid and don't have any of the issues. But well done to the club for the way that they've dealt with it in the end.
And maybe something that should be addressed, and it is somewhat of a concern to me. The club have also said that for the games played behind closed doors, they'll be reimbursed next season, whether that be in the form of you'll get these games off your season ticket next year, or it will be the case that you get issued additional match tickets, if my understanding of the paperwork was correct with the season tickets. So for talking sake, there's 7 matches played behind closed doors. Next season, you would only pay for 12 matches, or you could get 7 additional match tickets. 3, is that right? Sorry, I might have made the biggest balls up in the podcast so far, this episode anyway.
No, that's right, I would say so, aye.
So my concern lies with what happens next season, because you're going to have, again, another summer where season ticket revenue is down. I guess if it's the case that very few apply for the refund from last season, we'll have the full amount for last season tickets, give or take. This season, the season ticket sales are up, and that's been a real positive in a time where the club are receiving next to no revenue. Then next summer, though, it's going to take a dip. We most likely won't finish in third place. It's a wee bit of concern that what happens again? Do we have to urge people to up their Well Society subscriptions? Do we have to raise the season ticket price considerably for new season ticket holders? Which I can't imagine there's a great deal year on year if people, particularly adults that weren't season ticket holders the previous season, suddenly signing up. You're not going to get a raft of new season ticket holders in the 500s to 1,000. I certainly wouldn't imagine so. So what happens there? How does the shortfall get covered? Is that something that you would suspect that the Well Society board and such are contemplating already? Because that to me sounds like it could be a headache 12 months down the line.
I think every club's going to be in that same position, but I know that doesn't make, because everybody's got different finances, but I think every business and every walk of life is going to be affected by this. And it's easy to say, well, I'll just pull through, but I genuinely think, looking a year, we don't really know what's going to be a year down the line. My opinion is it'll be, I'd be happy just to pay my season ticket as normal and not take any deductions, but I completely appreciate that people financially won't be able to, or maybe don't want to do that. As maybe
I'm just I'm playing devil's advocate, and I'm sorry for cutting you out there, but I think it's quite a big ask for those that have given up games this season to then be asked to do the same the following season as well. I know. And I've said it about 12 times already in the podcast that it's unprecedented times, but the fans are quite often the ones that have to face the brunt of that. And we are a fan-owned football club, and that is just the way of things. But I think at some point there is going to be people that say, no, well, enough's enough. And yeah, I'm going to need to take back something here. So it's just that I don't know. And I know that everyone will be in the same boat come the preparations for 21-22, but it's just a wee bit of concern. And quite often when the club are struggling, the fans rally round, and I'm sure it won't be any different next year. But just with the current landscape and the economic climate and such like, I just do wonder whether it could be a step too far for some next season.
No, I do get it, right? Like, can we up a society? So, we'll up the society. Can you take? You obviously got offered the refund, so lost. I can't remember how many games it is, but I suppose what you're saying is, where does it stop? And I think it's difficult to answer that just now. As I said personally, football. And I know it means a lot to the three of us on this. It means so much to me, and I'll do whatever I can. And I'm sure everybody will do. And I'm maybe sounding as if I'm the do-gooder, but I just think I'll do what I can afford to do. I think that's the best way, and I think that's the way everybody should look at. And I'll not get embarrassed, or I'll not be ashamed to say I'll know when the point is that I can't keep doing it. If I'm looking at the product that you're buying, it's like any other service, I suppose. It is a really difficult situation that we're in. And I suppose nobody's ever going to have the right answer of what's going to be a year down the line.
Yeah, and I think another significant point, and you kind of touched upon it there, was that the club are doing all the right things by offering. At that point, it does become up to the supporter whether they're going to take it or not. I think also the point you touched upon about the heartstrings being pulled upon is a very significant thing. We all are diehard supporters, and we've got a very, very loyal fan base that come out and support the club through thick and thin. So, yes, it's going to be trying times. I just kind of worry with the knock-on effect when so-called normality hits back in, that there's going to be a lot of us that find ourselves in drastically different situations in terms of employment and such like, and that might have a knock-on effect. Hopefully not to the extent that fans are having to miss out and going to follow their team, but I just think it's a distinct possibility that maybe needs to be considered. But I guess, Scott, the here and now is possibly the only thing that we can deal with. We can't really deal or delve too far into the future.
I think, you know, it's as you guys are both saying, you know, at the moment, the club really are relying on goodwill, basically. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of goodwill towards the club and, you know, towards the team and then the club in general. But I think I agree, Andy, you know, that there comes a point where the goodwill will start to run out. And I don't think that point's just now, because obviously we are in these unprecedented times, you know, and, you know, things are different and they're asking people to buy season tickets and, you know, pre-order the new kit and whatever. And we had the, you know, the Phil Fir Park charity event a couple of weeks ago that they raised money for as well. And I think the thing that the club have got in favour just now is that, and I don't even particularly mean on the park, I don't think that as such has a massive impact, but the way that the club treat the fans just now, and certainly over the last few years since the Welsh Society took over and Les Hutchison came in and stuff like that, is that, you know, generally speaking, the club do treat the fans well. And as long as they continue to do that, then that goodwill will remain. Yes, it might wane a wee bit if, you know, things take a dip on the pitch or whatever. That's just normal football for you. But providing that the club continue to act in the way that they have been, then I think they'll continue to get the plaudits and folk will continue to give that goodwill.
Yes, certainly hope so. Well, we'll move on to departures from Fir Park. And there was a raft of players that have left the football club following the end of the 2019-20 season. I'll give you the list straight away. Rowan Ferguson, Mark Gillespie, Peter Hartley, Christian Ehlich, Adam Livingston, Christy Manzinga and Richard Tate, Rolando Ahrens, Michael Ndoye and Mark O'Hara. Their loan periods came to an end, while Charles Dunn, Christopher Long, Barry Maguire, PJ Morrison, Harry Robinson and Yusuf Hussain were offered extended deals. Tony Watt was the first player to sign on for the new season. And then he was joined by Ricky Lamy, who joined from Livingston yesterday. Pepe, we'll start with those that have left. And there's three names that certainly stand out in that list. Mark Gillespie, Peter Hartley and Richard Tate. Three guys that served the club fantastically well. And it's with a heavy heart that you see them move on, particularly Tate and Hartley, who they'll bring back memories of some really, really good times, runs to cup finals and such like. Hartley, club captain last season. It's always difficult, but not being able to give these players a send-off as well makes it that wee bit more, kind of, as fans, a wee bit more disappointing, I guess.
I mean, the three that you've mentioned have been none short of phenomenal. I think, though, and this is maybe an unpopular thing I'm going to say, that I think Hartley and Tate going isn't the worst thing. I think Richard Tate, maybe it would have been good to see him playing a full season at right back again, but I think he's maybe his best years were behind him, as were Hartley's. He's never really seemed to be the same player after his injury. And sometimes you're, as we've all discussed, how the club's quite tight knit. You actually feel as if you get to know the players now, and for the pleasure of meeting a couple, Richard Tate and Peter Hartley, and a few functions and stuff like that. And they're great guys, you know what I mean? They're dead down to earth and stuff, and that really influences you wanting to stay at the club. But was it the right time for them to move on and maybe get another couple of years and more first team opportunities? I think it was. I know Peter Hartley was potentially offered another deal and it got taken away because of the situation that we find ourselves in. But I think Ricky Lammy's, I know we're not talking about the incomings yet, but I think that's a phenomenal replacement. Gillespie, he's done great, and I think he's going to go into bigger and better things, and I wish him all the best, as I do to all the players that's away. But I really do think that, I'm sad to see that the personalities go, but I'm maybe being harsh, particularly in Richard Tate. I think it was the right choice for Tate and Hartley to go, unfortunately.
And Scott, Christy Manzinga will leave an incredible legacy, a bicycle kick goal against Gretna, a goal against St Johnston, a ridiculous dive against St Johnston, and the time when he tried to clear the ball four times against St Mirren.
I think the biggest legacy that he'll leave is that people inside Gretna Stadium were claiming that it was Elliot Freer who scored that overhead kick. You know, that was certainly something to behold. But, you know, I do feel a bit sorry for him, because a couple of times that he did come on, he looked like quite a big, powerful player. You know, we're a club that takes gambles, as the manager said, and maybe we would have taken another gamble on him if things weren't the way they were. And who knows, he might have been another keeper, or he might have just spent another four attempts trying to clear the ball. So who knows?
I think Tony Faker looked like a big physical player as well when he was rotten. I thought he was terrible. So I wasn't sad to see him go. He did teach you how to wash your hands right enough.
and that was a very significant thing just a couple of months ago. So it definitely did some good. I'll just never get over the dive at McDermott Park that killed me. But and the thing is, I'm being really unfair here, because I was on the Terrace Motherwell season review the other week, and I absolutely slated him in that as well. So let's concentrate on the two goalkeepers. No, sorry, just one goalkeeper just now. Ron Ferguson leaves the club. As two goalkeepers, because Mark Gillespie left as well. Jeez. Right, okay. So your first choice goalkeeper, someone for me that was a player of the season. Last season, Gillespie made so many important saves. Ron Ferguson spent the season at Linfield, but he was one that was always seen as an understudy should Carson or Gillespie go. He's now went. Obviously an offer to PJ Morrison, but there was also speculation of some interest in Scott Fox. Now that was kind of dismissed quite clearly by a few more in the know posters and Steelman Online yesterday. But for me, I really wouldn't want to see Scott Fox at Firth Park.
It's like Craig Sampson all over again, isn't it?
It's just for me to go from an understudy of the capability of Ron Ferguson, who by all accounts did very well in Northern Ireland last year. He's went over and had some Europa League experience. Surely that's the sort of a deputy you're needing. And we spoke before we started, Pepe, about the goalkeeping situation, and you were sitting, we don't know where Trevor Carson's at. And it was pointed out so many times last season when people inexplicably were clamouring for Carson to get back in. Like, how could he possibly drop a goalkeeper that's playing as well as Mark Gillespie is for a guy that's had, what was that? Not only a career-threatening injury, it was a life-threatening injury. It just seems a very drastic move. So we definitely need an assured understudy. And for me, Scott Fox is certainly not that.
No, definitely not. And I think it is probably, we've been really blessed with having two good keepers, but the kind of concern is that Trevor Carson doesn't come back the same keeper, mentally, physically, whatever else. Something like that does to a person. Hopefully he comes back and he's the same old Trevor, but it's just that concern. And as you say, Scott Fox just doesn't do it for me. I mean, Andre Day was with Partick Thistle's keeper last season who got relegated to the Championship. If that's your selling point, then I don't know what your bad point is. I think it was in the Daily Record that there was, we weren't linked, but it was potentially who Motherwell could sign in. There was a keeper release for Lincoln, which would probably fit our usual transfer bill. But listen, Motherwell always do this, don't they? They always have some up their sleeve, usually for the lower leagues of England, and that's maybe the type of keeper that's going to come in. Another like Gillespie type signing, or will it be another loan signing? Because again, I'm being critical. I've seen PG Morrison numerous times, and he's definitely not an understudy. I just don't rate him as any potentially being our first team keeper.
We'll not dwell on any signings that haven't happened yet, Scott. So let's focus on the arrival of Tony Watt and a permanent deal, and also Ricky Lamy. Pepe's already mentioned that Lamy impressed him last season. Tony Watt really seemed to be kind of getting up to speed as well, just before the games were interrupted. So, two, on the face of it, positive signings.
Absolutely. I think for two different reasons. One being, as you say, Tony Watt seemed to be getting going. He was looking good. He was looking fit. Very, very positive and exactly probably what we needed round about that time when he came in. And, you know, there's always a risk when somebody like that comes in that it ends up like another kind of McCormack situation. But there was nothing at all suggested to me that's how it was going to go. So delighted that he's going to be staying for another year. And as for Lamy, again, been impressed with him recently for the last couple of seasons when he's been playing for Livy. But one of the other things as well, which is I think is great, is that obviously he's played with Gallagher before. You know, so there is the potential there for him just to slot straight in. And always the worrying thing, particularly when you're talking about defenders or whatever, and even if they're not playing right next to each other, is that they don't have a relationship. So if he can slot in there, then, you know, there's not that bedding in period because they've played with each other before. Maybe not in our system or whatever, but I think it will be a good signing. He's a good age. I think already he was 26, was it yesterday, something like that. So, you know, he's in his prime. If we can get a couple of years out, maybe, and if he does half as well as Declan Gallagher's done, then that's been a good signing.
See, that's the thing, though. See, the thing about, he's always going to compare now to Declan Gallagher, isn't he? He's always going to be, is he going to be the kind of next Declan Gallagher? And I think that's a wee bit of pressure for him, but I'm pretty sure that he'll deal with it. He's one of the players that I did when that terrible game, and I think he beat 1-0, wasn't it, when the last game at Livy, and I thought he's a great big player. I really, really liked him, but I think he's going to have that kind of, a lot of fans will just be thinking he's going to be a mould of a Declan Gallagher and perform at the same kind of levels. So I think that's a wee bit of pressure for him.
I just actually went on to check what Ricky Lamy's age is, and I urge you, if you can, to jump onto the official site, because we've actually just launched our home jersey for 2020-2021, and I must say it's fallen on from what I wasn't that excited about the away strip, but the home strip is certainly very classy looking. I'm sure that will go down very well, but that maybe adds to again another two new strips for you to buy for the wee man as well next season, Pepe.
I certainly will be. I'm just going on to just now running in the kitchen to get my phone there. Can I just say one thing about the players that left? Do you know, one that really disappointed me, one that was really excited about, was Adam Livingston. When he was coming through the kind of the 20s, when I was watching him, I really liked the look of him, and he came with a wee bit of, he was a local boy, he seemed to be a Millwall fan. It just never really seemed to work. He never really seemed to be quoted by Robinson, and he's really good at picking players. For a while there, I thought he was going to be one of the ones that was coming through, like, see, the ones that won the Scottish Cup. I really thought he was going to make it, and I was disappointed to see him really go without making any kind of mark in the club at all.
Yeah, I just don't think that he ever really kicked on the way it was expected. He obviously had a few loan spells as well. It just didn't quite seem to work out for him, which is disappointing. But there's always kind of examples of that, and maybe guys that you think that he'll maybe potentially come back to bite us in a couple of years' time. I'm not so sure it will be with Adam Livingston and what I saw. But yeah, I think that certainly there was hopes for him. It just never quite came to fruition. So we've got the opportunity for some live reaction to this home strip. What's the verdict, guys?
A wee bit underwhelmed about it. It's my first. It's all right.
Absolutely mind-blowing enthusiasm there. What about you, Scott?
It's always difficult because we always look at these and go, oh, that looks smashing. And then, you know, there'll be a sponsor plastered across it. And it's, you know, it's bizarre how much a sponsor being plastered across the front of a shirt can completely change it. I don't really particularly, it's just a personal thing, like football shirts with like collars like that on them. But that said, I'm also a sucker for a new Motherwell shirt, so I'll definitely end up buying the two of them and rocking the collar. So, it's the right colours. It's got a Motherwell badge on it, so there you go.
I don't like the white shirt. I'm not a big fan of it at all. It's all right. It just looks, you know, it's nothing really that different about it.
It does kind of look like a kind of retro jersey, doesn't it, rather than a...
Some folks are saying it's like a nod to the 1952 cup winning team with the band on the sleeves as well as across the chest, which is different.
There's only so much you can do with the colours, I suppose. So
I want the jester strip back.
I think you're very much alone in that one, to be honest.
Just one point, that who do you think will be the captain next year?
It's an interesting one, certainly. I think that Declan Gallagher looks to me like he'll be the one that is handed the armband. I think from a supporter's point of view, I would like to see Alan Campbell been handed it. But I still think that it might be just somewhat too early for Alan Campbell. He's not exactly a very outward, is he? He very much concerned about his own business. And he's maybe, in fact, it's maybe to his detriment that he's quite understated at times. But I don't think that, in terms of personality, Gallagher seems to have the credentials. That there's always going to be the kind of murmurings and the about his past and such like. But he's shown character to bounce back and really forge a career. He's went on to become a Scotland internationalist. I think for me, it would be Gallagher. My head says Declan Gallagher, like, my heart says Alan Campbell.
I'm exactly the same as you, however. My wee boy Ben, as you know, speak about regular, he's adamant that the next captain of Motherwell will be Liam Donnelly. He's 100% adamant that, in fact, I said to him, if Liam Donnelly's the captain of Motherwell next season, I'll buy you £50 worth of V-Bucks for his fortnight that he plays. So he's adamant. So I was a bit worried there when I looked at the new strip and Liam Donnelly was modelling it.
Well, to be fair, he's absolutely held your hand through all the quizzes that we've done over this. So
I think we're all kind of scared to talk about Declan Gallagher's path because it's kind of that will be a factor. However, let's look at it. He's a character. He is a leader. He's the only candidate really for me. I think it does come for Alan Campbell a bit early, because I think I've seen what happened to Carroll McHugh, that extra pressure. I think big Declan Gallagher would take it in his stride. Don't make any difference to him whatsoever. And at the end of the day, he's made a mistake in his past. He's put his hands up to that and he's dealt with it. So I don't really think that should even be a factor. Although I know it will be. I mean, look at, we've already been there with one of our previous captains, Paul Quinn. We had a kind of couple of brushes with the law. So for me, it's Declan Gallagher all day long.
Yeah, and in terms of guys that have been offered extended contracts, and I'm sorry, we've kind of jumped about a wee bit here, but Chris Long is, for me, is the one that's really interesting. The offer to Charles Dunn seems very much like a last chance saloon for Charles to prove his fitness. He's over the last two seasons, really, to be fair, he's come back in and he's broken down, and it's been a real shame for someone that has got such an infectious personality and really does a good job when he's fit and able to play. But unfortunately, these times are almost too far and few between just now to certainly justify giving him any sort of lengthy extension, that's for sure. He's going to get the chance to prove his fitness. Chris Long, though, a player that impressed and frustrated for me in equal measures at times last season, certainly got it in his locker, though. Would you see him staying? Did he perform that well that he will be on the radar of other clubs? I'm not 100% sure.
I think I'd quite like to see him stay. I think I'm a wee bit like you, Andy. At the beginning of the season, I just didn't get it. I just didn't think he had it. But as the season went on, you know, his work ethic and just he's running and just, you know, some of the goals that he scored were pretty decent goals as well. And you're kind of thinking, now if we've got Tony Watt, you'd imagine that Tony Watt's going to start pretty much. If Tony Watt's fit, he starts. So who are we going to put him up there with? And you know, what kind of fodder are we going to put him up there with? I don't know. Like, probably if he'd asked me at Christmas about Chris Long, I would have said, nah, he's not for me. But the second half of the whatever the second quarter of the season before it stopped, whatever you want to call it, he actually grew on me, and to the point now where I would probably be a wee bit disappointed if he didn't resign.
You've also got the addition of Tony Watt as well, I suppose. And that could become a bit of a partnership going forward. I know we very rarely play two up top, but there could be something there as well, couldn't there?
I think Long's again probably the same as what you guys are saying, but I think he just took a wee bit of time to settle. I think he's a really good striker for this level, and I think he is weighing up his options. The only thing that really frustrates me is he just doesn't have much personality about him. He just doesn't seem to get involved with the fans like other players do. When he scores a goal, it's as if he couldn't care less if he scored or missed. And sometimes that rubs off on the fans. I don't think he ever really had a great relationship with the fans. And I know that's not as important, but I don't know if you guys, what you thought of him, but sometimes it looks as if he couldn't give a shit. And I think until, as Scott said, until after kind of Christmas, it wasn't until then where he really got the head down, and the Dundee game, he was outstanding, and he moved on. But I suppose, with all that considered, would we get better? Would we get similar? We probably could, but I'd probably really like him to sign again.
Guys, we've nearly been going for about an hour now, so I'm going to move towards wrapping the podcast up, but I'd like to take the opportunity to wish and offer our condolences to the family of Christian Bulu, who tragically passed away last week at the age of just 23. Now, the podcast sponsored Christian's jersey when he was at Motherwell last season. It goes without saying that everyone was absolutely stunned by the news. A young guy that was just making his way in the game, it's no age whatsoever, and his passing clearly affected so many that experienced him during his short time at Motherwell. Scott, it goes without saying that it was just such horrendous news and just so sad.
Aye, absolutely. You know, it's obviously, unfortunately, as a club, you know, over the last kind of 15, 20 years in particular, there's been a lot of tragedy. And not to say, you know, it definitely it never gets easier, but when it comes to that, it doesn't matter whether that's, you know, somebody who's been a club legend, or whether it's somebody, you know, like Christian, who, you know, probably one of the most bizarre, involved in one of the most bizarre games of football I've ever seen in my life, when I think we made three subs in about 28 minutes, two head knocks and a dislocated retina, which was for Christian, and that kind of ended his spell with us. But you know, you never expect to pick up the paper or whatever and see that kind of 22, 23 year old guy has passed away, just as you say, you know, forging his way in the game I believe he just had a quite newborn wee baby as well, just about 6 months old or something. So absolutely tragic. And obviously, as you say, all we can do is offer our condolences and our thoughts to his family and to his friends, etc., and everybody that knew him, really.
And Pepe, we had the quizzes over the initial stages of lockdown, and one of the prizes was a signed frame or box Keith Lasley boot. The plan is to get that to the football club, and hopefully they can make some money for Christian's family. It's not much. It's just our way of showing our appreciation for what Christian did in his time at Motherwell, and just some support for his family. What must just be the most shattering of times. It's so difficult because we have to reflect on people taken from us too soon, whether that be supporters or former players, all too often with this football club. It never gets any easier. I'm kind of trying to find the right words. I don't work off a script, and I didn't know Christian personally, but it's just as I say, so sad.
Yeah, I mean, we actually, I don't know if you remember, I think just at the start of this lockdown, we'd done the rundown of Steve Robinson's signings, and I think both of us said that we were quite disappointed when he left, because we felt as if he did actually have some. I remember the particular game I remember him was the Colts, the was it the Carmel Wafer, that was Edinburgh Cup at the time, and I thought he'd done pretty well. He's a big strapping guy, you know what I mean, and it's just it does put things into perspective. I've spoke about our love for football, but you just can't imagine how his family are dealing. If there's anything that you see, the small thing that we can do with trying to raise, whether it be a raffle or whatever we do for the Lasley signed boot, I'm just glad that it will go to a good cause.
Yeah, and that will go over to, I think the intention just now is to put it in the hands of the football club. There will be guys there, in particular Charles Dunwood, who was very friendly with Christian. They'll be able to make sure that it's done in a way that supports the family best. And I think it's got to be dealt with a degree of sensitivity in these horrendous times. But yes, we wish and offer our sincere condolences to Christian's family and friends. And yeah, as I say, his time at Motherwell was very brief, but he did make an impact. And I know from speaking to Kenny McFarlane, who went to the sponsors last season and met Christian, he was more than happy to chat away and have his photo taken and such like, and seemed just so happy to be amongst friends and teammates on the night. So yeah, devastating news, and as Pepe rightfully points out, it really puts things into perspective. Guys, I would like to thank you for your time today. I know we've been on a bit longer. There's been a bit of a gap since the podcast for Sam H, and I think that's kind of allowed us to build up many, many talking points. It feels like there's quite a lot going on. It feels like things are beginning to move towards the return of football. So, in that sense, happy days.
Thanks for having us, Andy, and let's hope everybody's keeping good.
Absolutely. Cheers. Thanks again for having us, mate. And everybody, take care, and we'll hopefully be back in Firth Park in the not-too-distant future and have a lot more to talk about.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. Guys, thanks again. We will be back at some point in the near future. There's a few kind of special guests that I've been working on over the last couple of weeks, and hopefully get the kind of one-on-one podcasts sorted out in the not-too-distant future. But thanks for listening, and we'll be back at some point, certainly. Cheers. Side.
Since I found